I thank the previous speaker for the nice add on non-equilibrium physics, because the topic of my talk, as you can guess, is the dynamics of quantum fields far away from equilibrium. And we haven't heard much talks on this subject so far, and this is actually surprising, because we know that a theoretical description for a heavy ion collision, at least at certain stages of the collision, needs non-equilibrium physics. And let me stress that this is not only for the earliest stages, but also for the latest stages, if we want, for example, cool through the QCD critical point, where we fall out of equilibrium due to critical slowing down, as has been pointed out by Biatnikov and Krishna in this context recently. Now, however, our understanding of quantum fields far from equilibrium is still in its infancies, and first quantitative results we have obtained recently concern simple scalar theories. However, we may learn already something about effective theories like linear sigma models, and therefore dynamics of pions or pion-like fields far from equilibrium. The numerical results, most of the numerical results I will present you, are even for 1+1 dimensional systems. And only recently we have started doing 3+1 dimensional calculations, and a few of them I will present today. Here I want to also thank my collaborators, Gerd Arz, Daria Ahrensmeier, Rolf Bayer, and Julien Serrault. So how do we theoretically attack the problem of the dynamics of quantum fields far from equilibrium? That is, we are not close to thermal equilibrium, we are not doing transport theory. Let me also remind you, we can't do any kind of lattice Monte Carlo simulations, which worked so nice for non-perturbative theories in thermal equilibrium, due to a non-positive definite probability measure at real times. So we have only a few non-perturbative methods at hand. One nice idea, which may be very helpful as a first step, is to think of an expansion in the number of field components. Indeed, 1 over n, where n is the number of field components, can provide a small non-perturbative expansion parameter. It can describe both the far from equilibrium situation, and also very interestingly, it can address critical phenomena. So we could, for example, describe physics near the QCD critical point. Now this idea, the 1 over n expansion scheme at leading order, or so-called collisionless approximations, have a very long history, almost more than a decade in non-equilibrium field theory. It is known that these collisionless or leading order approximations fail to describe the large time behavior. We've heard that using some specific inhomogeneous initial conditions, one gets some improvements, but most of the applications doing leading order non-equilibrium field theory were based on the hope that the corrections are not too large for not too late times. This is a question I will address and answer for these theories also during this talk. Progress to go beyond leading order was complicated by the fact that the standard methods based on the one particle reducible generating functional, which worked so nicely in thermal equilibrium, were found to break down in non-equilibrium, which is usually referred to as the secularity problem. What one sees is after a few oscillations, things just blow up. Now, these technical problems can be nicely circumvented by doing a 1 over n expansion of the so-called two-particle irreducible effective action, to which I will come to. In this case, one obtains evolution equations with non-local terms. So in practice, if one wants to solve them, one has to resort to some numerical methods. However, the reward is substantial. We can describe the approach to thermal equilibrium for quantum fields from first principles, even from time reversal invariant dynamics. And even, I think, more important for this workshop is we can get a quantitative description of far from equilibrium quantum field dynamics. The expansion scheme I will talk about today has also been tested in classical field theory. And there one can solve the theory exactly, that is, including all orders in 1 over n. And we have learned a lot about the higher order corrections from that. Let me very briefly sketch the 2πi1 over n expansion, and I won't present any technical details due to time. I consider an n-symmetric quantum field theory for real scalar fields. For n equals 4, this is just the linear sigma model for the light scalar and pseudoscalar pi n degrees of freedom. Now, the two-particle generating functional goes back to work of Luttinger and Ward, Baim in the 60s, and for relativistic theories for Cornwell, Jacquive, and Tombolis. Now, this generating functional is, in contrast to the standard generating functional, parameterized by two fields. First field is just a standard macroscopic field, field expectation value, or mean field. And the second one is a composite field, which is taken to be the extra connected propagator. Now, the 2πi effective action can be written in the following way. It starts with a classical action, then there comes a one-loop contribution and a rest. And this rest can be shown to just contain two-particle irreducible Feynman diagrams. They are diagrams, by cutting two lines, cannot be separated. Now, this expansion scheme, the 2πi 1 over n expansion, classifies now all these diagrams according to their scaling properties with a number of field components. So the leading order diagrams scale proportional to n. Actually, there's exactly one diagram that's a standard leading order approximation we are all aware of. And he just drew it in the air. The next to leading order contribution consists of an infinite number of diagrams. They scale proportional to 1. So they're down by a factor of 1 over n. Now, these infinite number of diagrams can be summed. And they contain, for example, on the level of the self-energy, the setting sun diagram as well. So here we have scattering. At next to leading order, there's again an infinite number of diagrams can be summed. It's again down by a factor of 1 over n. Here I will consider the next to leading order approximation. So the relative accuracy is of order 1 over n squared. It is important to note that there are no further approximations at this level. We will just take the next to leading order 2πi 1 over n expansion, and the equations of motions are then obtained by a variational principle, so no further approximation contained in here. Now, before I will just present to you the result for the evolution equations, let me introduce physical quantities that make it more easier to interpret. Now, these quantities, as you know, in a real scalar field theory, you have two independent two-point functions that can be associated to the anticommutator, or the symmetric two-point function, and the commutator, which is just the spectral function. Suppose you go to thermal equilibrium, then these two functions would be related by the standard fluctuation dissipation theorem. Out of equilibrium, these are linearly independent functions. And have in mind that this f gives us, it can be thought of being proportional to some particle number density, whereas rho gives us information about the spectral function. So the spectrum of the theory. Using these degrees of freedom, I will now discuss the evolution equations we've got for this linear sigma model type theory. I will consider here, for simplicity, the symmetric regime where most of the numerical results are available, and for the broken phase, the analytics have been worked out here. What we obtain by varying the next to leading order 2πi effective action is we obtain coupled evolution equations for the symmetric propagator and for the spectral function. Their second order in time contain an effective mass term that depends only on f and not on rho. And on the right-hand side of these evolution equations, we get all the non-local scattering part. This scattering part contains these characteristic time integrals, or memory integrals, and the respective self-energy sigma rho and sigma f. Let me stress here that these evolution equations are exact for known self-energies, in particular the time structure. At next to leading order, we obtain the following expressions, here for the mass term and here for the self-energies. Now, these functions IF and IRO, they're order 1. So what we observe is that the whole right-hand side of these equations scale proportional to 1 over n. So if we go now to n to infinity, or consider the leading order approximation, what happens is that the full right-hand side is zero. So there are no memory terms at leading order, which is well known, and there appear additional conserved quantities in this limit, and f decouples from rho. I will come to this in a moment. This is important. Having these evolution equations, we now have to specify initial conditions to solve these evolution equations. In the following, I will consider two initial condition scenarios which have been frequently used to mimic idealized features of far from equilibrium pion dynamics in the context of heavy ion collisions. The first one is a quench. One starts initially at high temperature and then cools the system much faster than the typical relaxation time, and this is mimicked by a sudden drop in the effective mass. Note that for the simulations in 1 plus 1 dimensions, there won't be a phase transition because you don't have spontaneous symmetry breaking 1 plus 1 dimension. You only see it in the 3 plus 1 dimensional. The second one, second initial condition I want to consider, has been called a tsunami some time ago by Rob Pisarski. And what it does, it considers in a very narrow momentum range highly populated modes. This is reminiscent of two colliding wave packets with opposite and equal momentum. Certainly, these initial conditions are far from equilibrium, and we can now follow the relaxation process and study generic features. To make contact with earlier work, let me quickly remind you of some properties of the leading order approximation. This is important since leading order is widely used, and it is an important question to study what survives of these properties once we include scattering. Go to next to leading order. So as I said before, on the right-hand side of this evolution equation is zero at leading order in these so-called collisionless approximations. Now this has the very important consequence that in this limit there appear additional conserved quantities not present in the underlying theory. It has been pointed out that, for example, initial particle number, which is just the combination of these correlators, becomes a constant of motion. And it is easy to check that these new conserved quantities, they dominate the physics from early times to late times. As an example, I've plotted here the effective mass squared as a function of time here in initial mass units for a large range of couplings from 1 to 40 and for a quench. All these masses for all the couplings start as 1. And what one observes is that within a few oscillations, the dynamics is characterized by a stationary or so-called fixed point solution. Now it turns out that this fixed point solution is nothing else than the solution of the leading order static gap equation with a non-thermal particle number density. Therefore, this conserved non-thermal particle number, which sets this value, dominates from early to late times. And of course, this has been also studied before in various contexts. What happens now if we go to next to leading order? What will happen is all these fixed points get removed and are replaced by a single thermal fixed point. And to get an overview of what happens once we go beyond leading order, we first start with using very different initial conditions, say quenches, tsunamis, or some wild population of modes. And the most characteristic feature, which one expects, is that there is a universal asymptotic late time behavior determined by the initial energy density. Or stated differently, if we wait long enough, then we can replace the detailed dynamics by thermal ensemble averages, as Boltzmann told us. The following plot shows the symmetric two-point function, or more precisely this f, for various modes, for three modes, as a function of time. And what one observes is for very different initial conditions, for the symmetric massive theory with homogeneous initial conditions, we observe three characteristic regimes. First, there is a damping regime where we see an exponential suppression of rapid oscillations. After this damping timescale, the system is usually quite far from equilibrium still. Then we see a smooth, parametrically slow change of modes. And finally, we see that the system thermalizes. It goes exponentially to thermal equilibrium, typically with a rate much smaller than this early time damping rate. So starting with some initial conditions, what we see is, if we go through these three regimes, there's an effective loss of initial conditions at the end.
The time is in mass units.
Now this plot, which I did, was in 1 plus 1 dimensions. And one might ask, what survives of this in 3 plus 1 dimensions? We're currently doing these calculations. And actually, so far, we find that the qualitative features stay the same. Of course, the numbers change. As an example, this is the symmetric two-point function in 3 plus 1 dimension, here for Gaussian thermal initial state. And again, one sees these characteristic features, which I was just describing before, also for the 1 plus 1 dimensional system. Now let me go through these different regimes in more detail. And let me concentrate on the far from equilibrium physics. I will start here with the early time behavior, first for weak and then for stronger coupling. What we see is here the symmetric two-point function at equal times, which I said can be thought of being proportional to a particle number. And the next to leading order calculation is this solid line. The characteristic feature I want to point out in this plot is that there's at early times an exponential suppression of oscillations. And the difference to the leading order here, the major difference, is not that it is less damped, but it's not exponential. It's qualitatively different. If you then go to stronger coupling, you see that it has more or less leading order, next to leading order, have not much to do with each other. This has, of course, the reason that leading order is fixed by these conserved quantities to a certain number here. There is, however, better leading order, next to leading order agreement for mode averages. So if you sum over all momentum modes, you can improve things, at least for early times, a bit. These were the equal time correlation functions, or particle numbers. Let me now come to another very important quantity, that is the unequal time correlator. The unequal time correlator is important if you want to know, for example, what is the correlation at time t with the initial state, with the initial time. So how quickly do we lose the information about the initial condition? At next to leading order, again the solid line, we see that the correlation with the initial state is damped. It's again exponentially damped. In leading order, no big surprise, leading order keeps the information about the initial condition and is not damped. Put it on the log plot, we see here that both the spectral function and the symmetric propagator quickly approach a straight envelope. That is, it quickly approaches an exponential. And the exponential is actually the same as we have seen also for the equal time propagator. So we have identified the early time scale. And in the following plot, I want to characterize what is the parametric behavior, what is the parametric dependence of this early time scale, and what are the higher order corrections. Now, the following plot shows the damping rate obtained from an exponential fit as a function of 1 over n. Concentrate first only on the full symbols, which is the quantum result. What one observes is that the damping time, or the inverse rate, scales proportional to n for large n. That is, for n to infinity, or at leading order, it goes to infinity, and it cannot be captured by leading order, of course. Now, the same calculation can now be done also in the classical theory, just thus enabling us to study what are quantum corrections. This is done for this round symbols. This is the next to leading order classical statistical field theory. And what one observes is that damping is enhanced if quantum corrections are neglected. That is, the quantum theory loses the information of the initial state later. It takes longer. The classical theory has another nice feature, and that is, it can be solved exactly. So going to all orders in 1 over n, or stated differently, you solve it by, say, 100,000 times solving the microscopic equations and then sampling over the initial conditions. This cannot be done in the quantum theory. But what is nice is if you look now at the result of the exact solution up to control statistical errors. This is given by these squared symbols. And you see that even for these strong couplings, we chose strong couplings to make it clear, that also for small values of n like n equals 4, which is the linear sigma model, there are only quite moderate corrections from arbitrarily high orders in 1 over n. So you see that next to leading order, 2pi, is already quite precise. The important thing I want also to state from this plot is, though there is a qualitative change from going from leading order to next to leading order, there's not much of a change going to next to leading order, next to leading order. And the qualitative change, of course, from leading order was the removal of the additional conserved quantities. Now I characterize this early time behavior. And let me quickly say something about this late time scale, which I pointed out was well separated from this early time scale. To make it more quantitative, let me show you this effective four-point function as a function of time. And what one sees is that the four-point function at early times has this characteristic exponential damping. And the second part of this plot is squeezed in the time axis to make the long time behavior more clear. Now this squeezed second part is, there's a blow up of this in the lower figure. The solid line is a next to leading order calculation, and the dotted line is an exponential fit. So one sees at late times there's again an exponential, and if we calculate the rates, we see that the damping rate is much larger, orders of tens, than the thermalization rate. So there are different timescales characterizing the early and late time exponential behavior in this theory, or stated more suggestively, there's a fast damping with a slow thermalization. And from this plot, I often get the question, why should we care about this late time slow scale if after the damping scale we are already quite close to equilibrium? This is not generic. This was just chosen for this plot to make these two time scales comparable. And as you have seen also from the previous plots, usually after the initial time scale, you are quite far away from equilibrium. And a nice example for this is given by the tsunami initial condition, which was this toy for these two colliding wave packets with opposite and equal momenta. The following plot shows the symmetric two-point function for various modes as a function of temperature for the tsunami initial condition. And these wiggles here to the left, these are the oscillations that are exponentially damped at early times. And you see after this characteristic early time scale, they're typically quite far away from equilibrium still. What one observes is here is that for the tsunami momentum, I told you that this F is proportional to an effective particle number, the tsunami decays quickly with time. Hand in hand, it goes that the low momentum modes get populated. Now for this plot, we chose a rather large particle number density, larger than 0.35 or larger, this is from an analytical estimate, a particle number density where you expect that quantum corrections are suppressed. For this reason, we also put in the classical solution next to leading order, and also the exact one. And what you see is that the classical evolution quite nicely follows the quantum evolution for large enough particle numbers. And what you also see is that all the higher order contributions don't change much the 2pi next to leading order calculation, even at late times. Of course, due to the difference between quantum and classical thermal equilibrium, differences have to kick in at some point. And a very interesting question, a very interesting parameter, which is also interesting for, say, phenomenological reasons, is the inverse slope. So you can compute the inverse slope for this tsunami initial condition. And after this toy collision, what you see in this model is that first, in this language, the low momentum modes get strongly overheated. The high momentum modes get undercooled before they all merge and can be characterized by a single time-independent independent of time and independent of momenta, a single temperature. Now this inverse slope was constructed such that for a Bose-Einstein distributed particle number, it becomes momentum independent. So what you see is that the quantum system at late times indeed goes to a Bose-Einstein distributed system. On the other hand, if you study the classical system instead, you see it doesn't reach a Bose-Einstein distribution. Indeed, one can show that it goes to classical thermal equilibrium. So I hope I convinced you that at least for this toy, simple models, we can do a first principle calculation starting from the earliest times far away from equilibrium and coming to the late times thermal states. Now, what have we learned from this, from these simple models is, first of all, certainly one should stop using leading order approximations to do non-equilibrium physics. And this has mostly to do with the fact that leading order has additional conserved quantities which just fix the time evolution to a, say, a hypersurface in your phase space. This is not so much a problem in thermal equilibrium, where we don't want to get rid of initial conditions. But in non-equilibrium, it is. The second important thing I think we learned is it doesn't matter too much how precisely you implement scattering. We did this next to leading order 1 over n calculation, but we did also loop calculations. And we found that even far from equilibrium, the loop calculation beyond leading order and the 1 over n calculation beyond leading order were very close to each other. This is important because in gauge theories, a 1 over n calculations is often hard to achieve. So let me come to my conclusions for this talk. I think the 2pi 1 over n expansion is a powerful quantitative tool for the non-equilibrium dynamics from first principles. It includes scattering, memory effects, off-shell effects. It's just a first principle calculation. There are no further assumptions in there. What is nice, it's valid far from equilibrium as near as well as near critical points. So we can, in principle, study also in an effective theory QCD near the critical point. This, by the way, will not be achieved in a loop expansion. So once you go near critical points, this nice observe that one can observe that loop expansions and 1 over n expansions give the same features will not be true. So to get the universality classes correct, you need to go to the 1 over n expansion. Let me not go through these timescales which I just reported. Let me maybe just point out again that we saw this characteristic separation of time scales, this very efficient damping, and the slow thermalization for a variety of initial conditions. And something which I think is most important for this workshop, now that we've seen that these methods work nicely for scalar theories, they will probably also work for Fermionic theories, it would be very nice to have an extension to gauge theories. But there is an additional problem, has to do with Ward identities. And also with the fact that if you just naively do 2pi formalisms for gauge theories, your result will be gauge parameter dependent. That has to do with the fact that you just have an incomplete summation of a given order in the coupling. There are some suggestions by Emil how to address this, and I hope we can address this problem here in this workshop. Thank you.
So we heard from Uli that Uli argued that the data in heavy ion collisions indicate thermalization in one Fermi, and we heard on the first day from Rolf, from even 0.6. We heard from Rolf Beyer on the first day that his and collaborators' their bottom-up thermalization approach. He quoted a number of 5 Fermi, which is considered a long equilibration time, whereas you are seeing thermalization on timescales many hundreds in the natural units of your system. Do you have any idea why gauge theories should thermalize so much faster than the scalar theories that you are studying?
So First of all, thanks for this question. It's a, I think, one of the most interesting questions we raised here. And I mean, those timescales we have seen so far in scalar theories were far beyond what you would expect for this heavy ion collision. But we haven't explored it really even for the scalar theories. There are very interesting effects, and I will show you a plot which I usually don't show in a workshop because I'm not too clear about its interpretation, but just because it may be very interesting in this context. We haven't explored fully that in non-equilibrium, effective couplings can become at intermediate times very strong. It's something which we sometimes also observe for specific initial conditions for the tsunami initial condition. So what you can have is, due to non-equilibrium effects, you can have at intermediate times rather strong couplings. This could be a possibility. I'm not propagating this as the some explanation. I just say that even in these toy models, we see possibilities to come to couplings that exceed what we would expect in thermal equilibrium. Maybe this could be one way to address this question. But otherwise, no. I have no good idea of that so far.
I mean, you had these two time scales which are well separated, and of course we have to figure out which one is relevant for example, generating pressure and stuff like that. I had a different question. You have done these different calculations with widely varying initial conditions. Does the late time behavior always give you the same approach rate to equilibrium?
Depending on the energy density, yes. It's a universal behavior at late times.
Okay. What does it mean, depending on the energy density?
I mean, the energy density is everything that also characterizes you, your thermal equilibrium. It tells
okay.
you where you go. It's the only
so
relevant quantity.
It depends on the temperature.
Characterizing. Yeah. It depends on the temperature. Yeah.
It is not really necessary that the thermalization scale in gauge theories is much shorter. It may turn out to be as long as what he finds in his scalar theories. I think what is important, if you compare with Uli Heinz's calculation, is the scale. It needs that certain bulk quantities, which typically involve a lot of integrations over modes, come in a sense close to some heterodynamic description. And that typically may happen on scales much shorter than the thermalization scale. We discussed it a little bit at lunch. I think the really relevant question is, from which point on do you have a type of quasi-hydrodynamic description, including viscosity and so on, if it is not too large? At which time scale does this become important? From there on, I think this general argument about the flow will not be too much altered, even though the thermalization scale may be actually much longer.
So the only hope you have is, for example, for mode averages, that you don't need this late time scale. But if it depends on the particle number densities per mode, this is not correct.
Yeah, let me also address Krishna's question and suggest that you might want to look at two different situations here. A number of years ago, we looked in the classical limit at these equilibration timescales in the case of gauge theories coupled to scalar field theories, and Ulrich was part of that calculation. And what we found was that this long-time behavior persisted and existed in the case when the gauge theories were coupled to scalar fields. And it had to do with the coupling to the scalar field and the interaction among the scalar field. But that if we just looked at the single gauge theory without the pure gauge theory, they did not exist at all. And that actually may be favorable to Rick.
You say you find times that could explain this very...
Yeah, I mean, we had relaxation times of the order of hundreds and thousands of times the normal typical time scales. But not in the case of pure gauge theories.
When we couple to the scalar field theory,
there was a bottleneck in the scalar field sector that introduced this long summarization time scale. Once that was removed and in purely gauge theories, things went a lot faster.
The scalar fields are qualitatively different.
Maybe you should say, once you study things like near the QCD critical point, the physics there will certainly be described by a scalar effective theory, if it's in the universality class of the three-dimensional easing model. Then, for example, these timescales would matter, but of course, not for then early times.
No, isn't it? I mean, in QCD, we have this clue-clue scattering, which are favoring this small angle scattering, which is actually singular. And also the branchings, which do a lot of the job in the equilibration time to shorten it, which you do not have in the scalar theory, because when you have, this is just the lambda phi to the fourth model, where you do not see any kind of enhancement in the cross section. So that's, I guess, the dynamic difference.
You mentioned that in 1 plus 1 dimension there is no phase transition really. Now, does this come out of your equations as well? Or,
But
you know, personally, I think you need inhomogeneous configurations like kings to be able to achieve that. But I wonder if this is also very important, say, in the real case with heavy ion conditions, that collisions where you need inhomogeneous, typically inhomogeneous. Inhomogeneities to achieve fast thermalization. So, but in your specific equations.
So, from these equations, you see no matter how hard you try, in 1 plus 1 dimensions, you don't get spontaneous symmetry breaking. This is again a qualitative difference to the leading order approximation, which gives you spontaneous symmetry breaking.
So, the spin waves are not in this order.
Yeah, but does he have the spin?
I mean, this is a homogeneous ensemble, but of course.
No kinks.
Oh, you can have. I mean, the microscopic realizations can have inhomogeneities. It's like in your example where you finally make a homogeneous ensemble out of it.
I'd like to point out that there is something which is qualitatively different in non-abelian gauge theories vis-a-vis the scalar theory. And when we talk about thermalization and so forth, what we have in the back of our mind is a cascading of energy. The three-point coupling in the non-abelian theory, which is momentum dependent and is very different from a scalar coupling, actually favors energy cascade. And that takes care of some of the branching aspects that Rolf and Dominic were talking about. 1-2 processes in the non-abelian theory are momentum dependent. Those actually work favorably. Now, going from the scalar theory to saying something to the non-abelian theory, I think is far-fetched, precisely because the energy cascading is favored by the three gluon vertex in the non-abelian theory.
Let me just tell you that for these tsunami initial conditions, what you see is something like a cascade distributing the energy at early times. You see a power law behavior, for example, also in this two-point function. And this is also the case for which I showed you this increased coupling at early times. But still, I think there's not too much we can carry over to QCD from these calculations. It's more either for the QCD critical point that we can apply it, or it's a feasibility study that we have a quantitative method to study this.
Yeah, but the point is for the vector theory compared to the scalar theory, you may have power law behavior for the scalar theory, but it's typically a falling power law as you go to smaller momentum. But for the vector theory, it's flat or rising.
Right.
And that's
there's clearly a difference.
A huge difference in being able to couple modes.
Thank you.